Check my inbox and what do I see? Just another day, another T-R-A-D-E. I'm an addict, and I need it in my veins. I'm an addict, otherwise I feel plain now. Every day I wake up, people got a problem. Making all these trades up, got me saying got them. But I've been paid up, I even started from the bottom. See, I don't wait up, I ain't even playing possum. So what it cost, I'm just a couple of firsts. Can't believe that it worked, not to say I'm a jerk. But I'm an addict, it's what I said in the first. You can curse all you want, you can pray in your church. But I'ma keep tapping return, I win up, I learn. I ain't trying to burn any bridges, I yearn for the feeling I earn. All my winners will turn, you had a cheek before I drop you like the beat. I'm an addict, and I'm not really ashamed. I'm an addict, I'm a climbing with the brain. I'm an addict, and the pot is what I'm playing. I'm an addict,
Russell Rocky,
better names. Trade addicts pie, let's go.
I'm Rocky Petrella, and I have a trading problem.
I am Tommy Blair, and I have a trading problem.
And I'm Dustin Lubke, and I'd like to have a trading problem, but no one wants to trade with me ever.
Oh, that sucks. Hey, everybody. How you doing? It's session 323 of the Trade Addicts Podcast, a proud member of the Dynasty Addicts Podcast Network, the DAP Network, if you will, and we will. So, got Tommy back here tonight with me again. He just keeps coming on short notice when Russ has to miss the show. So appreciate you coming on tonight, Tommy. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Back home. No more Mexican Wi-Fi. No more salsa music in the background, screaming babies, any of that. So thank you so much to those of you who suffered through that. I appreciate you coming back today. And it's a good thing you did, because we have an awesome guest, somebody who's a mentor to me. Somebody who I lean on for their advice. I value them a ton. It's Dustin Lubke at the D Unit 13. Dustin, how you doing, man?
You're too kind. I'm doing great after that nice, not deserved welcome and intro. I'm doing pretty good tonight.
Good, man. Why don't you go ahead and tell the listeners what you do, where they can find you? Because it seems like you've got a lot going on right now.
You know, everyone always says that, and I kind of tell them, like, it doesn't sound like a lot, but you can find me on Twitter at the DUnit13. That's the best place to find my stuff. I'm the content director over at DynastyProsFootball.com, so Dynasty Pros on Twitter. You can check out some of my stuff there. I did just sign up to be a writer over at Fantrack, so Fantrack HQ. You'll start seeing some articles from me there. I also do write for QB List. I help out with some other people. My DMs are always open, so if you need help or have questions about fantasy, podcasting, anything, I'm there. I'm available. I like to just have, I literally have like three people who I only ever communicate with DMs. I've never seen them tweet. I've never seen them other than in my DMs asking me trade questions. And I love it, because the way I look at it is my job is to be a resource to everyone. So if that's to help you win your fantasy league, have more fun in your fantasy league, be better at your podcast, whatever it is, like, I'm there to be a resource. So totally there just to help people out in life, in fantasy, whatever it is. So I try to keep my opens. I try to check my DMs all the time. Love being part of this community. That's a big part of who I am, is being a positive force in this community and helping people win. So that's the best place to find me. It sounds like I got a lot. I do have an announcement coming on Friday, so keep an ear out for that. If you follow me on Twitter, there'll be an announcement coming Friday afternoon for me. So I announced I was at Fantrax yesterday, announced today I was going to be on this podcast, another one tomorrow, but I got a big one Friday that's, I think, going to be something I'm really excited about.
That's awesome, man. And I think you may have forgotten a really cool tool that you unveiled too, the browse tool, right?
My browse tool, yes. I put together the basic form of it is a consistency chart, but it's more than that. It gives you a consistency number, but also what I call like an SE number, so a spikes and excitement number. So it gives you a browse stands for balance, reliability, and opportunity with spikes and excitement. So it gives you a RO score, so reliability and opportunity score. So I went through over 700 players, factored in three factors, so three different stats for each player, at least, sometimes it's four, looked at their consistency, basically how often they hit their metrics and their standards, and then that gave them their consistency score, and then how often they were over that and how much they gave you an excitement score. So it's great for best ball. It's a great roster building and management tool. Really excited. It took me a long time. That is not my strong suit, just if anybody knows. I am not a data modeling guy. That just, it's not my thing. I love spreadsheets, but like trying to input numbers and do math is not my thing. So Really love the browse score. It's great for best ball. If you do best ball drafts, it kind of tells you who could be the spiky, you know, spikiest of guys, who's going to give you those big weeks or who might disappoint you. So I do really like the browse score. It's, you know, people seem to like it that use it. So it's been great.
Totally. It's funny to me. We spent like the last 2 minutes on Dustin's not that much.
Yeah. I wish I was doing not that much.
Yeah. It for me, I guess because I love it, it doesn't seem like that much.
Yeah. Well, that's, hey, man, we've got an interview for you, something we ask all of our guests for the first time they come on. I just want to know, how long have you been playing fantasy?
I have been playing fantasy for probably 20-some years. We have a longstanding family league that is still the worst league in the world because it's non-fractional points. It's single QB. I think we just added PPR like a year ago. I think it's one running back. It's just... it's gone from 10 teams to 12 teams to 14 to 10. It's the fact that we don't have fractional scoring browsers. We have like 5 ties every year. It just screws everything up. So started that. I've won it a couple times. Been playing Dynasty now for 4 years, almost 5 years now. Was in Keeper leagues before that. Keeper is my preferred format. It gives you that mix of Dynasty, but also kind of the redraftability where you're going to see some of the top names go back in to add that excitement into it. But my Keeper league kind of fell apart after some drama with trades and whatnot. So we disbanded that. A bunch of us joined into a Dynasty League, which is going. So I'm in a couple of Dynasty Leagues. And then obviously your Scott Fish Bowls and your Warrior Bowls and your Baby Bowls and your Super Leagues and all the other charity leagues that are out there. I'm part of those as well.
You talk about how bad that first league was. I'm in my first Dynasty home league. They still will not remove kickers and defenses.
My family's still
insane.
We have kickers and defenses. We're only allowed 3 ad drops a week, and I think you're only allowed 25 for the year.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
And it's even worse when you're in a dynasty. Like, kickers and defenses and dynasty is stupid, and I cannot get enough votes to get it out of the league.
No, that makes no sense.
That's awesome. So over the past 20 years since you've been playing, what are some of the best trades and some of the worst trades that you've completed?
So the best trade I ever completed was in 2022. I traded a third-round pick, a 2023 third-round pick, for a 2025 third-round pick and Jordan Love. Now, this was before Jordan Love was a starter. Aaron Rodgers was still there. Obviously, I'm reading the meds. So now in that league, I have C.J. Stroud and Jordan Love. It's a 2-quarterback super flex league, so I'm sitting pretty good with Stroud and Love. So that was the best trade. Conversely, worst trade I've ever made involved a quarterback as well. I needed a quarterback. Let me just say this. This is in a league that you can start 2 quarterbacks plus a super flex. So you can start 3. And I had none, and I was right on the cusp of a playoff. So I needed a quarterback that was starting. And this was in 2020, and Jalen Hurts was not starting at the time. It was his rookie year. I traded Jalen Hurts for Phillip Rivers and a 3rd.
Oof.
In a dynasty league, but I needed a starter because I was trying to make the playoff push and Rivers was playing. I thought I'd get one more year and then obviously finished up with the Colts, retired, and Jalen Hurts is now Jalen Hurts.
I had the reverse of that. Like, I had a good Hurts trade because of when he wasn't a starter. I think his rookie year, I traded Odell Beckham Jr. straight up for Jalen Hurts in a super flex league. And yeah, that worked out pretty well for me.
Yeah, I mean, I'd still regret trading away Jalen Hurts in his rookie year, right? I thought Carson Wentz would stick around and he was okay, and Jalen Hurts was just going to be okay going as a pro. But I needed the help now, was making that push, and that's what you have to do in Dynasty. Sometimes you have to give up the young asset for that proven player and make that kind of short-sighted move, and sometimes you win, and then sometimes, like me, you lose.
Yeah, there's so many second and third round quarterbacks that have that promise that never deliver. Yep. I would probably have made that trade, to be honest with you, and I'd be lamenting it just as badly as you are right now.
Yes.
All right. Do you have any guiding principles you take with you into these trade negotiations?
So I like to be the aggressor in trades and the offerer of trades. So I'm always actively searching trades. That's why I said I'd like to have a trade problem, because I would love it if people trade with me. I'm always looking to see who wants to move players, what might work for both of us. So, I mean, I think we talked about this. I have spreadsheets for my Dynasty Leagues, and I have them color-coded by team, and I track every player. So I can look and go across the league, who are the quarterbacks? Okay, this guy might be missing a quarterback, or this guy might need a wide receiver, and that's where I look for it. That's something I look for. I get it. We can't win trades, but you want to find a trade that you do win, but you also want to find a trade that someone wants to trade. There's no point in trying to trade a wide receiver to some guy that's got 5. starters. Like, if he's got, you know, we have a guy in the league who's got Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson, T. Higgins, I think DK Metcalf, and I think he has JSN. So, like, I can't trade him Tyreek Hill. Like, he doesn't need him. There's no value there for him. So it's really looking at that. That's my guiding principle is, where is the value? Who has the need for what I'm trying to sell? And that's how I look at it. I do believe that trades will never come from out of the blue. I think you have to build those relationships with your league mates before the trade. I think that's where trades get done, is building that friendship, building those connections, talking to them about non-trade stuff, I think opens up the avenue for trading. So that's a big principle for me just in my leagues is, how do I communicate with them on a regular basis, whether that's trash talking, whatever it is in the group chat or private messages, to keep that communication open? Because if I just cold send you, here's a trade, you're going to be like, no, why would I want this? Like, there's no back and forth. They don't have a relationship with me. So building relationships, I think, is an important aspect for me going into trades.
Love it. Yeah, soft skills are totally underrated and something totally underrated. I don't use them well enough. So, yeah.
Well, you should just get them video chat and flash them that smile, Tom. You'll get all the trades you want.
Yeah, we'll see how well that works out. I have a face for podcasting. So even though it's slow, Frank was kind enough to give us some news to talk about today.
As always.
Yeah, thank you so much, Frank. All right, so I know I'm just a temporary occupant of this chair, but how do we not have like a Frank's Red Hot Takes or Nuggets or News or something? Frank's Red Hot, get at us. We need to have some kind of sponsorship because
come Frank on, Frank's Red Hot. We know you're watching, so let's get sponsorship going.
Yeah.
All right, getting into the news. Schefter reported that Brandon Ayuk said he's playing for the 49ers this season, despite the contract dispute. I know Rocky is devastated. He won't hear any more Ayuk updates, but it sounds like he's a 49er for 2024 and will join Higgins in the free agency class next offseason. The drama is done for now. I'm going to kick this to you, Rocky. Are you devastated? Do you think this is settled?
Frank was being sarcastic because he talked about Ayuk for a while. It was Rashee Rice every week, and now it's been Brandon Ayuk every week. But I kind of always expected he'd probably, once we got past the draft, I kind of expected he would end up staying in San Francisco. We talked about that, I think, on a recent episode. Trades rarely happen post draft, pre NFL season. Maybe there's a slim chance if he causes trouble in the season, or there's, you know, conflicts with Shanahan or whatever, that it could happen in season. But yeah, I always kind of expected this would be where we ended up. And so, yeah, I mean, it doesn't really change much, but I am glad that Frank doesn't have to put an Ayuk update in the news every week now.
What about you, Dustin?
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was he was always going to play for San Francisco. They were never going to trade him.
Yeah.
Yes, they maybe didn't want to trade. Maybe he wants to be with Washington and Jaden Daniels, which still is crazy to me that somehow he played with Jaden Daniels in college, because that doesn't seem to line up chronologically for me, but it did. Listen, the Ricky Pearsall truthers and the Jalen McMillan truthers, or whoever out there is, you know, Jacob Crowning, they're the truthers out there for San Francisco. They're in shambles right now, because that was thing like Ricky Pearsall is going to take over when they trade Ayuk. Well, now Ricky Pearsall is the third wide receiver on a team that has never used their third wide receiver. He might not beat Juwan Jennings out for that role. So,
and he's like the fifth or sixth option when you factor in McCaffrey and Kittle.
Yeah. So if I'm a dynasty trader, now if we're talking trades, I'm waiting a couple weeks into the season and trading for Ricky Pearsall, because right, Ayuk's probably gone in 2024, or possibly Debo or both. And he takes a lead, but I think people had high hopes for him sneaking in this year, that they were going to draft him, get him early, get this value out of them, and then he would step in once Ayuk got traded. Now that Ayuk's back, and I knew that was always going to be the case, his value, you know, Jacob Cowing and Ricky Pearsall's value is going to start trickling down. You wait a couple weeks, three, four in the season, that's when you go trade for those guys.
Yep, absolutely. Moving on, J.J. McCarthy, not expected to start week one, per The Athletic's Alec Lewis. Let's go back to you, Dustin. Are you expecting a JJ to JJ connection in week one, or do you think McCarthy's going to be on the bench?
I think McCarthy should be on the bench. I think all quarterbacks should be on the bench for week one, like all rookies. I can understand starting Caleb and Jaden Daniels, but I think Drake May, Bo Nix, JJ McCarthy should be on the bench. I think it's just better for the development. I think they brought in Sam Darnold to compete and have the job. I think he has the job coming into camp. I do think there's a competition with JJ. I'm just not sure JJ is going to show enough to – he's going to have to blow Sam Darnold out of the water. Sam Darnold's going to have to be, you know, what Sam Darnold has been, like really bad for him to lose that job. So I don't expect it week one. I'd have to look at their schedule and find out when the bye week is, but JJ will play eventually this year.
What do you think? Yeah. Yeah, I think we talked about this maybe the last time I was on Junkies about J.J. McCarthy, and I always kind of expected Darnold to start the season. I expect McCarthy probably will play at some point because Sam Darnold's going to Sam Darnold at some point.
Yeah.
But he was always, I mean, especially compared to some of the other guys where some of the other rookies landed, he was always more looked like more of a bridge guy than just the guy that was going to be the backup. So I kind of expected it. And everyone has kind of said that McCarthy probably of all the guys might be most best served, you know, sitting for a year, maybe. Again, I don't think it's going to be a full year, but sitting to start his career and maybe learn a little bit. So not a surprise at all. I do expect he will start at some point. And as Dustin said, it might just depend on how long it takes Darnold to blow up.
Yeah, they have a week they have a week six bye, so you can see him start week seven against Detroit, or possibly week nine, because week eight they play Thursday night, so they get a slightly longer week between eight and nine. So you can see it either seven or nine is when I think JJ will take over.
Makes sense.
So for Trade Addicts and Scott Fishbowl scoring, Rome Odunze could return punts for the Bears. Does this move the needle at all for you, Dustin?
First of all, the report got real clickbaity because it was like, oh, the coach said he could. If you read what the coach said, Rome is a four-down player. He only ran three punts in college and one of them for a touchdown. So, yes, he has the skills. Yes, the cream rises up. But what he said was, Rome Odunze is in consideration along with everyone else. So it's not like Rome's in consideration with A, B, and C. No, it's everyone else. So that's telling me that Rome is just as likely as DJ Moore. He's just as likely as Keenan Allen. He's just as likely as Caleb Williams to return punts. You can't sit there and go, he's in consideration with everyone else on the team, but he's likely to return punts. Now, if he does, yes, it's good points. But the punt return hasn't changed. And punt returners average 10, 15 yards of punt return. Like, it's not a ton. The kickoff is what you want. There's no way Rome's doing kickoffs.
Yeah, I don't really have anything to add to that. I pretty much agree with everything Dustin said there.
Yeah, I do as well. What I think is maybe more interesting is the kickoffs. Will there ever be a non-specialist who is doing the kickoffs? You know, a running back or wide receiver who's capable of kicking off 40 yards, 50 yards downfield so that they're an extra athlete on the field. They're not one of these 170-pound weaklings. They're one of these gigantic, you know, DK Metcalf types who can crush you as well as kick the football off.
So I had this conversation with Andrew Cooper of what are teams looking for in their kickoff return guy? And I think it's going to be the guy who can get up to speed fast, so the quick guys who can – so if you look at 40 times, you're looking at that first 10 – and the guys with the good vision and elusiveness, right? You don't necessarily want a Saquon Barkley. Like, yes, Saquon Barkley can bowl over people. That's not what you want. You want a guy who can be quick and can hit the holes. So when I'm looking at it, I look at Kansas City, Luis Riis-Zemmet, who's that rugby player they signed.
Yeah.
That's a rugby play. Like, it's just a straight line, and he just has to weave his way and make one or two guys miss, and then he's gone. And he's got the speed, and he's got the elusiveness, and he's got that ability. So the Bears, I have Velus Jones being their punt returner and maybe DeAndre Carter and then Tyler Scott. I don't even have Rome Odunze in the consideration right now. So I think it's one of those guys who has a little bit of speed, can get up to speed fast, and then can just make one or two guys miss and they're gone. I don't need this. I don't need a Barry Sanders who's going to like juke spin, go back around, you know, loop. I just need a guy because it's a line now. It's not waves. It's just a line. And they just have to get through the line. The question will be is kickers, are there going to be kickers that kick? Or are we going to see what Kansas City does talk about Luis Riis-Zemmet, or they had another guy they were talking about putting back there to have basically another tackler so they don't injure their kicker on tackling. We'll see how that looks like. So you might see someone like a safety learn to just pooch kick it for kickoffs and be an extra tackler out there, which I think would be super interesting as well.
Yep, absolutely. Can't wait to see Hall of Fame game. just the first opportunity to get a glimpse into what this is going to look like.
It's going to be super interesting because I wonder if teams will adjust mid-season if they kick the ball and the returners are getting 20, 30 yards and there's like, forget this, we're just going to kick it out of the end zone and just take the touchback.
Yep. All right, final note from Frank. There are a few wide receivers who want new deals and might miss the start of camp, most notable being CeeDee Lamb, but we will cross that bridge when we get to it. The TA motto is players play. Do you agree, Rocky?
Yeah, that motto always comes from me. Every time Frank wants to bring up one of these guys that might hold out or whatever, that's always my thing. Guys are – nobody holds out. You know, Le'Veon Bell did it years ago. Nobody actually misses significant playing time, if any playing time. So, yeah, all these guys will be playing whether they get new deals or not.
Agree, Dustin?
Yeah, there's just no benefit now from sitting out. Le'Veon Bell proved that if you sit out, you're just not going to get the deal. You're going to take the year off of your already short career. And you can say, well, the wear and tear is not going to be there, but another year is another year old and recovery is slower. So they're going to play. They're not going to take the – be different if they got no penalty, but they're going to get hit with fines left and right, and they're not going to lose money. So they're going to play. They're going to play themselves into a deal. That's the best way of getting yourself the best deal is going out there and proving it on the field.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Frank. Doing yeoman's work once again in July. At this point, Dustin, we're going to give you the option. Would you like to move on to the trades or the listener questions?
Let's go to listener questions.
All right. Scrolling down. We've got some good ones. So
yeah, that's why we did get some really good ones on Twitter. So appreciate everybody that dropped a question in there because they were really good.
Yeah. And I'll be honest, I have just deep anxiety in my chest right now because I made a bad trade. So we can prolong that a little bit further. From at Making You Viral, do you agree with the idea that contending rosters should have 2-ish times amount of RBs to wide receivers? If not, what are your thoughts? Rocky, let's kick it to you first.
I think you've fallen to this camp. Am I correct on that, Tommy?
I'm more of a 3-to-1.
Okay. There you go. But yeah, I pretty much agree with that. I mean, I probably roster a decent amount more wide receivers than Tommy does, but I've talked about this before. I really like, especially getting the low end running backs, the guys that are super cheap that you're hoping hit for a week or two, maybe a month if you're lucky, the backup guys, the third string guys. That's why, in my opinion, you want so many. You want those guys that'll hit, and then you can flip them or you can get some points out of them. But I definitely agree. You should have. You should not have more high end running backs, in my opinion, than wide receivers. But you should have significantly more running backs than wide receivers.
What do you think, Dustin?
I think it's fair, and I think it depends on what point of the season. I think start of the season, yes, you should have more running backs because their value only increases. But I think when I get towards that stretch run of the playoffs, like a week or two before the playoffs, I'm looking to load up on wide receivers because generally wide receivers have more upside on any given week. Yes, a running back who's a starter will get the points, but do I want to hold, let's take Dallas this year. Do I want to hold Zeke Elliott and Rico Dowdle? No, I want one of them, and I want a wide receiver like a Brandon Cooks who could possibly score more. So I'm okay doing it early. I think 2-to-1, 3-to-1 is great, and you can then trade, like you said, Rocky, get some value out of them, flip them, you know, convert that into more starters. I think it depends on your build, too. Like, if you start out and you have, let's say you have Bijan and Breece Hall, I don't need a bunch of scrub running backs. I'm just going to ride those guys and maybe have one or two backups. I'm not going to do a ton. So if you have two elite guys, I think it's fine to have less running backs. But if you're just going, I've got Rashad White and DeAndre Swift, then yeah, I want to load up with a bunch of guys because those are a lot more uncertain. So check out the browse system. It gives you that opportunity to see who's the consistent guy and who might be the more boom bust guy and kind of balance that out on my roster.
Yeah, what I do is I look at, of course, every player except for Brandon Lloyd 1 year is going to miss 1 week due to buys, right? So we have to take that out from our assumptions of starting. And then running backs typically miss about 3.5 games. Running backs who get touches miss about 3.5 games per year. And so you need to factor that into your starting requirements, right? Like work backwards, figure out how many starts you need at these various positions and build in just enough insurance at the wide receiver position. That's where you need to start. Like, so if I'm going to assume that a wide receiver is going to miss 2.5 weeks, one for their bye and 1.5 for injury, and I need to start two, like, okay, so I have 14 weeks, right? So that's how I approach it. What I want to do is fill as many flexes as possible with running backs because they're cheap starts, usually free starts, unless they are the Saquon Barkley types. And that's why I roster usually 3-1. It's just access to points. It's the cheapest way to fill a roster, to fill a lineup. I recognize that's not for everybody. That's not for every format. And so what you need to do is take a look in the mirror and say, like, how much do I need to know who I'm going to be starting in week 3? If the answer is, I don't really care, you're probably more of a running back guy. If you really want to have some form of security, your rostership is going to lean more heavily towards wide receivers, in my opinion.
Yeah,
it's a good point.
All right, second question from at Making You Viral. Which rookie or year 2 quarterback do you think will make it to the Hall of Fame? Rocky, do you have a strong lean here?
I mean, I don't know if there's anyone I feel confident is going to make the Hall of Fame from that group. I mean, I guess if I was going to pick one, I mean, it's the chalk answer, but it would be CJ Stroud for me of all the rookies and second year guys. He was my QB1 coming out. He's proven to be as good as I thought he might be, maybe even better year one than I thought he would be. It looks like Houston's doing everything to try and make him succeed. And I actually think the fact that this is not good for fantasy, but that wasn't his question, for making the Hall of Fame. I think it's better, too, that he's not a mobile quarterback, not an Anthony Richardson or something like that. More career longevity, probably better passing numbers, which I think is more likely to get you into the Hall of Fame. So he would be, again, the chalk pick, but he's the only one that I really want to even suggest that about at this point.
Yeah, I agree. He is a chalk pick. And I looked at it this way. Running quarterbacks don't have the longevity to get there, right? So that takes out Anthony Richardson, Jaden Daniels. I don't know if Caleb Williams has – I think there's too much pressure on Caleb Williams that if he falters a little bit, he's not going to get the longevity. So Stroud is the answer, but if I had to take someone other than Stroud, I'm going to say Michael Penix. I think talent-wise, he's good. I think he was my number one quarterback in this draft in terms of talent. He gets a team. Now, he might not play for 2 years, but he's going to have a team with Kyle Pitts, Drake London, and Bijan Robinson. So he's going to have the talent around him to stack wins, to stack yardage, to stack touchdowns. And that's what you need to get in there. And he's in a weak division that he could make playoff appearances, playoff runs, possibly a Super Bowl, NFC Championship appearance. That's what it takes to get in the Hall of Fame. So if Michael Penix is my guy outside of CJ Stroud, because he has the best team around him for the future once he does play.
That's a pretty bold take. I like it. I'll throw out Anthony Richardson as my bet for the Hall of Fame. He just has an opportunity to break the NFL, the biggest, fastest, strongest, most athletic profile that we've ever seen. And in college, even though it was a limited sample set, he was great at avoiding sacks too. That did not translate early in his NFL career. And we, of course, have the injury concerns. But what if he's Ben Roethlisberger? Like, they don't always have to stay as a mobile, thumping type quarterback. They don't all have to turn into Cam Newton. He could evolve his game. If he's good at avoiding sacks, he could develop. He could become that type of passer that has the extended career. But like you said, Rocky, it's way too early to anoint any of these people. I love the question, though. It's early July. Like, let's just have some sugar plums in our heads today. You know?
Yeah, I mean, Richardson's a great call because he could be a Randall Cunningham who had a really long career and was a, you know, not as big as Andrew, but had that mobility and was able just to scramble on and throw. Even look at someone like Steve Young who just ran around and be able to throw the ball. Like, you could have the Richardson. I just wonder if he's going to be durable enough.
Yeah, it's a fair point. And you could say that about really any of these guys. If you look at a lot of the players that we were so excited about going into year 2 and 3, a lot of them lack the longevity. It takes a while because you build up these resources around these quarterbacks. And that's not really the question that we're trying to answer in this Hall of Fame conversation. It's what happens when you strip away all of the weapons and resources because you've given them $50, $60, $100 million contract. And it's like, okay, now you're on your own. The spotlight is on you. The expectations are high. go succeed? So we won't know the answer to this question about a Hall of Fame trajectory really until the second contract is awarded.
Yeah, and I think, but I do think there's this, an avenue of pressure and expectations. So someone like a Bryce Young, a Caleb Williams, a Jaden Daniels, those guys who went early in drafts, they're expected to be good. So they're going to get less of a leash to be a starter, where someone like a Penix, someone who, even though went later, is not expected to start right away, someone like a Bo Nix is going to be a lot more longer leash than a Caleb Williams will. So that's where I think it comes into play, that the expectations for those guys, they might just get cut sooner. Look at Justin Fields. Like, he, his expectations were so high that they didn't meet up to it. Even though he was good, he just wasn't good enough to meet his expectations, so he got cut.
Yeah. All right, Rocky, at Jesse Shaw asks, what are your draft strategies for SFB?
Wing it.
Nailed it.
Where are you? What spot are you drafting in, Rocky?
Oh, well, that, I was going to say, that's actually part of my draft strategy. I think this is something else we've talked about before. But I had 11. Ever okay. since Scott has done the third round reversal, I've been in the last 2 years. I like having the end of the first round spot, get the early second and the early third. So that's part of my draft strategy, was picking a division I could get 11. I happened to end up picking Russ's division, by the way. So I'll be beating down on Russ this year, hopefully. Nice. I mean, other than that, I've been lucky enough to be in the last four or five, and only two playoff appearances. So take anything I say with a grain of salt. But I like to go pretty heavy, not heavy, but I like to go early tight end, and possibly two early tight ends, because the premium is so high, especially with the first downs and all that. Obviously, the kick returners are going to throw in a fun wrinkle this year. I'm still not sure exactly how I'm going to handle that. So maybe Dustin can speak on that better than me. Early tight end. And I tend to, in redraft, I actually tend to not wait on quarterback as much as Tommy knows I like to. So I may take a guy in the first or second. If not, I will absolutely be taking two in the third and fourth. But ideally, I like to have two by the fourth. I like to get an elite tight end in there. I've gone quarterback, tight end, quarterback before, I believe. So those are the two things for me. And I also do tend to pick some kickers at the end of the draft. When I think some people just like to dismiss them altogether, just because they're kickers. but the way Scott scores it, they definitely have value. It's a floor play. It's not a ceiling play, which is definitely not going to help as much in the playoffs. But to get you to those playoffs, I think they can be valuable starters, more so than a lot of the guys you're going to be picking in like the 21st round. So
that's so much more insightful than I'm going to be. Dustin, I'm you.
Yeah, I'm the 101. And so I'm doing a live draft on Sunday in Madison. I wanted the 101 because I wanted Josh Allen. And this was, I picked my spot before scoring came out, but I was like, I want to get my guy. I don't have Josh Allen in any of my leagues. I want my guy in the first round. Now, do I think that's the best pick for 101? No, I think there's other picks. So the mock drafts I've been doing, I've been able to get Josh Allen in the second round, get Jahmyr Gibbs. And what I want with my first two round picks, because of the third round reversal, I want two guys that have a shot at being the number one at their position. So I want a guy who has a shot at being the number one quarterback in Josh Allen. And if I can get Jahmyr Gibbs, who I think has a real legitimate shot to be the number one running back this year, that's what I'm going for. Or if I can get a tight end, so a Laporta, a McBride, a Kelsey, who can has a legitimate shot to be a number one at his position, that's what I'm going for. After that, I'm really waiting on quarterback. Originally, I was talking going quarterback, you know, Allen and then another quarterback with, and Tommy, I think we had this discussion that super flex, quarterbacking your super flex is not the best play every week.
Yep.
It is the play because of the potential upside. But when you really look at it, only half the teams in the league should be starting quarterbacks. And especially in Scott Fishbowl, with the way that the yardage numbers are for quarterbacks, they don't get a ton. I think we're going to see a lot more running backs. I think we're going to see a lot less people starting two quarterbacks. Now, I'm going to take three quarterbacks in my draft because I want the insurance. But I'm willing to wait till 10, 11 to get my second quarterback, because I can get a Will Levis, a Russell Wilson, sometimes Deshaun Watson's falling, depending on how things go. So I'll take a guy who maybe throws in there. I look at that guy as he's a flex play. I think super flex for me at that point in Scott Fishbowl is just a regular flex position that I can throw a quarterback into. I don't want to have four quarterbacks because I can only start two. So I'm looking at this way as, and Tom, you kind of led me to this, that it's just not the most optimal play. It's the play for the upside, and there's a little insurance if your quarterback goes down. So I've been going the first two rounds trying to get someone who has potential to be the number one of their position. So if I can get Allen and Gibbs, I'm super happy. If I can get Allen and McBride, I'm super happy. And then we'll see what happens in the third. If I get Gibbs, I'm going wide receiver, maybe a tight end. I'm okay with getting a Dallas Goedert who can be a top five tight end in the fifth, sixth round. I'm going to play value at that point. But that's what I'm looking for in the first two rounds is I want two guys that have strong potential to be number one at their position.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I'm fading quarterback in this format pretty dramatically. I only want to have one to start off, and I want him to be someone with a week 10 or later bye. I'm just going to ride that as long as I can because I need an asymmetrical outcome, right? I need to be super unique to have the advantage in this type of format. And I think it's fading quarterback. Get one. Who has decent upside. And then, hammer some elite tight ends, some running backs, and then kick returning wide receivers is my bet. However, I am going to try to sell my number one overall draft selection to somebody who's willing to donate to Fantasy Cares. I haven't figured it out yet. It's going to be somewhere on my Twitter timeline. I want to get a donation of some significance, and that individual can pick whoever they want at the 101 and just royally screw up my team. Not that I was going to be good anyway.
That's a big part of Scott Fishbowl is I want Josh Allen. That's my guy. You want to auction off your pick. I'm not going to Scott Fishbowl thinking I can win it, right? Like 1 in 4,000, probably not me. Would I like to make the playoffs? Yeah. But for me, Scott Fishbowl is about community, the donations and fun. And so if I can build that through my draft and I can have fun by having Josh Allen, who is my quarterback, because I'm a Bills fan and I can have a great time at a live draft. The best connections I've made in the fantasy football space was at the Scott Fishbowl live draft last year. I met Nick Script, who I'm now working with Fantrax. I met Jim Coventry, who just took time out of his day to like sit down and talk to me. Been on his show twice, like great guy, kind of like a mentor to me. I met a bunch of other guys there, Wendy Early, Hoove, John McGlynn, Steven Roeder. Like I talk to Steven all the time now. Like that's where I made the most connections because I just went and hung out. So if you're listening to this and you can hear my voice, find a Scott Fishbowl live draft and go to it. Like even if you're not drafting, just go hang out. You can participate in the raffle or sign auctions. Like you can have fun, meet people. I'm trying to go to Chicago next week if my wife allows me just to hang out. For me, it's about the fun in the community and what the good that Scott Fishbowl and Fantasy Cares does. I'm not looking to win. I'm going to do my best and be competitive. I'm not going to make horrible picks, but I'm still going to get my guys. I love Jahmyr Gibbs, so I'm going to get him. If it gets to a round where I can take Keon Coleman, I might take him around early because I want the stack and I want Keon Coleman. I just got his jersey. I want another Bills player on my team. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to have the fun with it and enjoy Scott Fishbowl for more than just trying to win. We get really narrow. Like I need to win and look at projections. Like there's more to it than just trying to win.
Yeah, definitely. And one other thing I was thinking of is kind of funny because it's sort of the opposite of something you said, Tommy. But I actually think the whole unique build thing is overrated in Scott Fishbowl. Mm. I get the thinking behind it. But if you look at I don't have like the rosters in front of me to back it up. But just from my memory, if you go look at the teams who won and I know the very first year I was in, I made the final round and finished 12th. And my team was not a unique build. I just had guys that got hot and I had some guys that hit that I drafted. Like, I think that's what you see way more often than some team that does something crazy like, you know, doesn't draft a quarterback until the 12th round or doesn't draft any wide receivers until round 15 or something like that. Like, I think they just – the teams that, A, have injury luck and, B, find those guys. Like, find the Puka Nacuas. Find, you know –
the C.J. Stroud last year. A lot of people's third quarterback, and he came in and, you know, people were drafting Joe Burrow and then got C.J. Stroud as the third quarterback, and that saved their season. So you're right. You have to have some luck.
Yeah, I just I from what I remember, just the I've usually seen like on Twitter or whatever, what you know, you'll see a shot of the winning roster, and it's almost never to me one of those like really something like this is why they won because they drafted four tight ends in the first six rounds or so. You know, I mean, at least again, it's anecdotal, but that's the way I remember it.
I would love to go back and see. Like, if you took everyone that made the final round last year, like, what spot they drafted in and do that for the past couple of years to see kind of where that's – like, if we look at last year's finals and, you know, there's 100 people in it and 50 of them drafted at 1 and 2. Okay, well, maybe then there was some strategy like that where I would love to see those numbers. I don't know if they're out there somewhere, but that would be interesting to see. I think you need to be a little bit diverse, a little bit unique. I don't think you need to go crazy, but I do think uniqueness is fun. But you can be the same lineup. We could all have the same lineup, but if we make the difference in start choices, that's going to matter too.
Yep.
Yeah, and I'm not just saying go chalk with every pick. I'm just saying some of these like more out there strategies or that you have to be so ridiculously unique, I think is, like I said, I just think it's a little overrated, that idea.
Thank you, Jesse, for the question. Any chance to elevate Scott Fishbowl, we will certainly take.
And if you, and if you're not in Scott Fishbowl, there are satellite leagues. And I think he just opened some new divisions today. Yeah. So talk to Fantasy Cares. Like, make sure you're signed up. Join their lives. Like, you can still get in at this point. Like, there's still a possibility you could get in.
Yep. At MIOD __ MIOD. They say they can't stop trading for Brian Robinson, Christian Watson, Jonnu Smith. Do you think I have a disorder of some sort, or am I onto something? I will start by saying, of course you have a disorder. It's July and you're trading for Jonnu Smith. You've come to the right place, though. we're here for you because we are also doing these just obscene things in early July. Rocky, is MIOD crazy? Should they be trading for Brian Robinson, Christian Watson, and Jonnu Smith right now?
Not really. I'm not particularly interested in really any of those guys. I can kind of see where he's coming from. Christian Watson's dirt cheap compared to what he once was. Of those three guys, I kind of like the upside of Christian Watson the best of the guys he's going after here. Brian Robinson, I feel basically nothing towards Brian Robinson. I don't dislike him, but I don't see any upside there. Rookie quarterback, Jaden Daniels could be good year one, but I think that's asking a lot. And I just don't expect anyone in that offense to be particularly great. You know, historically, rookie quarterbacks don't help their offenses in year one that much. So, and then Jonnu, obviously I like the offense, but you know, I believe he's on Miami now. Tyreek and Waddle are there. You got Achan to worry about. It helps to be in a good offense, but I mean, the only good thing I can say about him, sure, getting him for a fourth round pick probably. So I don't really have much hope for any of these guys in particular, except like I said, maybe Christian Watson. I did like him a lot coming out. Can be a big play guy, but I think you may have a slight disorder.
Justin? My guess is that MIOD likes to ride motorcycles and skydive and white road rap because he's a thrill seeker. That's what these picks are telling me. He is looking for those big spike weeks. The rest of the weeks, be danged. Like, he doesn't care if Jonnu Smith goes out there and gives him 2 points. He's excited. He will talk about how he scored 15 points because he had 6 catches for 50 yards and a touchdown 1 week. He's a thrill seeker, and he needs to recognize that because that's what you're getting Christian Watson. Now, I looked at their browse numbers. Outside of Jonnu, Christian Watson has a 3.7 SE score, which is their spike score, which is pretty high. Brian Robinson's a 3.3. Jonnu's a 0.9, so it's not great for Jonnu. But Jonnu did have some really spiky weeks. He just was super, like, inconsistent as well. So you're looking at guys that are really spiky at that point. So you're a thrill seeker. You're looking for a guy that you can brag about and go, hey, this guy scored me 20 points 1 week. And someone goes, yeah, but what about the weeks where he scored you 2? It's like, it doesn't matter. He scored me 15 points in week 5. That's what you want. You're a thrill seeker, Myard. So go with it.
I kind of love Brian Robinson. I think he's totally,
I do too. I love him. He's such a sneaky value. And everyone's, you know, going Austin Eckler. And I think Brian Robinson's going to be really good.
Yeah. Frank in the chat is asking, who's your guys' favorite Packers wide receiver this year? Can either be overall or at value? Rocky, any thoughts on the Packers wide receiver core?
I kind of think that Jaden Reed is the obvious pick. I think he looked the best throughout the whole year. At value, Dontavian Wicks kind of interests me. He did pick it up at certain points, and you can get him still pretty cheap. I'm not a big Dobbs guy. And like I said, I did believe a lot in Watson coming out, but I don't think it's happening at this point. So
What do you think, Dustin?
Deny thy father and refuse thy name, or if thou will not be my sworn, my love, I will no longer be a Capulet, because it is Romeo. Oh, Romeo. Romeo does. He is the best receiver you want on the Packers, and I've been saying this all offseason. He is the most consistent. He has the chemistry. He is just going to be there. Jaden Reed is now had two less targets with him in one less game. Yes, but two wide receiver sets. It's going to be Romeo Dubs and Christian Watson. Jaden Reed is going to be the third wide receiver who's going to come in, so he's going to have limited snaps. I'm all about Romeo Dubs this year. Give me him all the time. I'm stacking him and Jordan Love. It's Scott Fishbowl, hopefully. I'm taking him everywhere I can. I've got him in all my dynasty leagues. Give me the Romeo.
Do you think Reed is overvalued then at this point?
I do. I think Reed is overvalued. I think people saw these flashes, but it took Christian Watson getting hurt. It took Luke Musgrave getting hurt. I just think Jaden Reed is a talented player. I just don't think he's going to be on the field enough for me to be a guy that I can count on weekend. Now, he's going to have spike weeks. If you're in best ball, I'm taking Reed. But if I'm in the manager league, I want Romeo Dubs, because I know I can put Romeo Dubs in my flex, and I'll be fine with it. He's going to get me 8 to 10 points. Somebody's going to have a little more. Whereas Jaden Reed might come out and give you a 2-point week and then give you 15. Like, I don't want those big spikes. I'm looking for more consistency. That's why I like Romeo Dubs.
Yeah, there's so much confusion in this core. I would have said Tucker Kraft is the guy you want, but then he tore some muscle off the bone this offseason, and so he's probably on the shelf for the first half of the year.
Yeah.
I'm selling all these guys at their current value because I can move laterally into clearer situations where I can be more confident about my start-sit decisions. What I don't want to do is to guess and to guess wrong repeatedly. Yes, you could capture those spike weeks, and yes, each player could be good in best ball, but at each wide receiver's current value, I think every single one of them is a sell. If you want a part of this offense, just get Jordan Love. Like, you don't have to guess with him. Like, if you think the wide receivers are all this good or there are enough good wide receivers, just get the quarterback.
Yeah, I agree with that.
All right. At Zales 2525, a question for plus one tight end premium league, so 2 points per catch. What are your thoughts on hoarding tight ends to start them in your flex spots? Let's assume start 11 with three flex spots. Is their floor higher and worth it to create positional scarcity, or is it a foolish strategy? Dustin, what do you think about this?
If you are stacking top end tight ends, I'm fine with it. But if you're stacking bottom and middle end tight ends, no. Like, you don't need to have Chigakonkwo and Pat Freiermuth and Cole Kmet on your roster. If you can tell me you have Laporta and Kincaid and Kyle Pitts, then yes. But if you're stacking anyone outside of the top six guys, I just don't think you create the positional scarcity. I don't think that exists, because why am I going to trade for Pat Freiermuth when I can just get a Chigakonkwo off the waiver, or I can pick up a Tyler Higbee when he comes back, or a Noah Fant who's going to score me within 2 points of that? I don't want that. So you don't create the value for yourself there. I don't think their value out exceeds a wide receiver, because those guys, if they're the number two target on the team, they're going to be higher up ranking. So is a Pat Freiermuth going to be two on his team in targets? Probably not. So I just don't think there's a lot of value there. So unless it's the top end guys, I'm not hoarding tight ends.
I pretty much agree. I love the idea of hoarding high end tight ends, though. I saw this question, made me think. I'm in a league that actually, you don't even have to start tight ends. It's actually a league I commish that I started about 5 years ago. And so it's only 1.75 premium, not even 2.0. And because of that, the tight ends were, even with the premium, because you didn't have to start them, they got kind of undervalued. And I have like Andrews and Kelsey and Ertz. And I've been kind of doing that for the whole time. Like, I have Hockenson and I've been in the title game 4 of the 5 years, only won once, but been in the title game 4 of the 5 years the league's existed. Like I said, even though you don't need to start tight ends at all, that 1.75 or 2.0 premium, I think, is a lot. And like I said, like Dustin said, though, it's got to be the high end guys. Like, I'm not, like he said, starting Chigakonkwos and things like that, but you can, if people are, but I do think in a 2.0 league, it's a lot harder to do that, especially if you have to start a tight end. I think it actually made me easier for me to do it, because it's a league where we didn't have to start tight ends. It's an all flex league. That's why it's a super flex, but all flexes. So that's why you didn't have to start a tight end. If you have to start a tight end, people value them a lot higher in 2.0. But if you can do it, I love it.
where there's room for the tight end, let's say 7 through 14, is if you can arbitrage a wide receiver into tight end and you can get a plus. So you're getting essentially the same amount of points, but people are so enamored with wide receivers that they think that they're getting some unseen upside in the wide receiver that is obviously overcome by the extra point per reception. We saw this with like Evan Ingram last year. He was in that tier and he too PPR'd his way to a great finish and outperformed a lot of those wide receivers. That's what you want to hone in on, is target share, yards per route run, those types of things where these are integral parts of the offense, not necessarily the touchdown component, which is what we typically focus in on at tight end. And so Pat Freiermuth is somebody that I would actually target in this format. I would also look at, people don't like Cole Kmet, and I agree, I don't really like him that much either, but I think he would be a viable streaming candidate in this format. I would almost look at tight ends at the very bottom as well as backup running backs for the first few weeks of the season until you got enough injury attrition to where you're starting your running backs, and then you can sort of transfer your starts over to the different position in those flexes. But it provides a lot of flexibility, and that's what I really love about the 2.0 PPR for tight ends, is it does create enough of an advantage to where somebody will roster Chigakonkwo. Whether or not they use him optimally, whether or not they construct their roster in a way where they can start him, that's up to them. But he does have some viability in small samples.
Yeah. But I do think it goes back to knowing your league mates. If you have league mates that are looking for those big spike weeks, that are looking for those kind of boom bust guys, then maybe this is a more viable strategy. I tend to be very conservative, and I tend to play with players that are very conservative who want consistency more than spike weeks. So trading those guys is harder for me. But if you play in a league with some guys who are, maybe they're big into best ball and they kind of like, oh, this guy's got these couple boom bust weeks, they may never actually start them those weeks, but that's their mentality hasn't gotten that far. They're just like, oh, this guy's got big game potential. Then that might be a more valuable strategy for you in those leagues.
Totally. All right, that was our last question. Let's move on to trades. Rocky, can you break down the scoring for TA Leagues?
Yes, just a reminder, TA Leagues are 12-team PPR Superflex, 1.75 tight end premium with 0.05 for return yards, except TA1, and we do have a TA1 trade, two TA1 trades, so... But I don't know that return yards factor in much to any of these trades anyway. So
let's knock those two out real quick. Jalen Waddle and Cedric Tillman. Of course, Cedric Tillman for a 25 first and fourth. Dustin, are you interested in a first and a fourth for Jalen Waddle?
Before Dustin answers, I do want to add a tiny bit of context because I happened to notice it when I was putting the trades on the sheet. This was a guy trading for his first back.
Oh, interesting. Oh, okay. Yeah. Good context.
Yeah.
I'm still taking Waddle and Cedric Tillman over the first and the fourth. I think Waddle is worth a first and probably a third in that format. So I think you're giving up a little value. Cedric Tillman doesn't have much value to me, to be honest with you. Like, he's so buried on that depth chart now with Jerry Jeudy coming in. But I think Waddle is worth a little more than a first and a third. Now, if you... Getting your first back is always important, especially if you're projected to be a bad team and it's an early first. So if you are projected to be an early first, maybe I go with that. But if an unknown right now, if you think you're going to be a playoff contender, I'm going to go with Waddle. But unless I can tell I'm not going to make the playoffs, then I will take Waddle. But if I'm not going to make the playoffs and I know it's going to be an early first, I'll take the first.
And tend to agree with you that I would take Waddle, but I do think he was paying, like I said, the get your first back tax.
Yeah.
Because he was selling off play. I think this was the first one, but this next trade where Kincaid is going out for picks, which we'll talk about in a second, and there's one I didn't put on the sheet where he actually sold Brian Robinson for a second. He was just moving off all sorts of players for picks, so I think he wanted to get his first, even if he had to overpay a little bit for it before he started selling off some of the other guys. And no offense to the owner who did this. I think it's maybe he's going a little too far in general. When I go through, like, Waddle and Kincaid are guys I wouldn't mind holding on to in a rebuild. So I still think Waddle's young enough that he's going to have plenty of good years left. So I think I would knowing that first is going to be high, I think it's a pretty fair trade, and I get why he did it, but I still think I prefer Waddle.
Yeah.
Yeah. I kind of like this move because it begets other moves, right? So you have to think of this through a cone almost of this is the most important first step because it allows for other flexibility. Now, what you do with that flexibility, you know, that can be good or bad, but it does create more fertile ground to make moves to push yourself into a rebuild. I'm not going to haggle over an extra third, even a second round pick, if I need to get my first back to make the successive moves that I'm looking for. And let's talk about one of those. Like you said, Rocky, this manager traded away Dalton Kincaid. They got a 26 first, a 25 second, and third. Rocky, why don't you weigh in first on this one?
Yeah. I think, again, this is pretty fair. The fact that it's a 26 first, obviously for me, weakens the value of it a little bit. But he's also getting the 25 second. I'm not a huge Kincaid believer, but there is a lot of opportunity this year. They don't have a great receiving core, Keon Coleman, notwithstanding Dustin. But he could kind of almost function possibly as even like their wide receiver one, basically. So it'll be interesting to see what he does this year. But I think I would be fine taking the picks in this scenario just because I was never super high on Kincaid. I know he had some good games last year, but I think if they, you know, once they start kind of building that back up, maybe if Keon Coleman is very good or whatever else Dustin's saying he is. So we'll see how Kincaid factors in. But I think I'm fine taking the picks here.
Yeah, I'm fine taking the picks as well. You are pushing off the value until 2026. I do have concerns with Josh Allen's durability. When does he start missing some games? Could be this year, could be next year. I think it's more likely this year than next year. But if it doesn't happen this year, it's definitely happen next year where he's going to miss probably four games due to injury, just based on number of hits he's taken over his career. I'm not a huge believer in Kincaid. I think he's super talented, but I just think the scheme doesn't really play to his strengths and doesn't play to where they want him to be. So I think you're fine. I do think Kincaid's value will continue to go up this year. So I think you are selling at Kincaid's floor, but you're making moves. And I think what Tommy said for the previous year is you're allowing yourself more flexibility to make more moves with the second and the third this in 2025. And you keep that first. You kind of just tuck that first away, in my opinion. You don't even look to trade that. You just tuck that away. And then you look to move the second and third and maybe make some auxiliary moves with those picks.
The only way I would make this move is if I had a plan for, you need to have a timeline. When am I going to exit this rebuild? I don't want to exit in 2026. I want to build myself a plan for the non-point scoring season of 2025.
Yeah.
Don't plan on making that 2026 pick. Find a way to leverage that. Otherwise, I would just keep Kincaid. I would rather just have him. The second and the third aren't enough to make me change my mind because that 26 first, you're hoping it turns into Dalton Kincaid, right?
Yeah, I mean, realistically, your rebuild should take 2 years. If you're rebuilding for more than two years, you're doing it wrong. What should happen is you realize you got to rebuild, you shift some assets off. The first year you get three or four core pieces. The next year you should have enough pieces where enough draft picks and capital that you can either turn that into high-end draft picks or known commodities, and that second year you should be competing. So that's what I did 2 years ago. I was bad. Last year I needed picks. I had the 101. I traded back, picked up enough picks where I got C.J. Stroud and Will Levis and Puka Nacua and Tank Dell and a couple receivers just through draft. Now I drafted really well. And then this year I had two more firsts, so I was able to add some more pieces to that, and now I'm ready to compete. If you're rebuilding for 3 years straight, you've messed up severely. So you're right, Tommy. You don't want to necessarily make that first in 2026, but you don't want to trade that now. You want to let it sit and kind of accrue some value because, as we know, the pick values are low and they keep getting, as we get closer and closer to each draft, they keep going up. We don't know too much about the 2026 class right now, but I would say that's till next offseason and then trade it and move up and get some players and maybe move up in the 2025 draft and see what you can do with that pick. But I think it's fine if you're rebuilding, but you're right. You do have to have a plan, especially at tight end as well. If you have Dalton Kincaid and Kyle Pitts or Dalton Kincaid and Sam Laporta or whatever it is, or maybe you have Dalton Kincaid and an Evan Ingram or even a Pratt Freiermuth, I think it's fine because you have someone who's good enough to replace. He's not going to place all that value in your lineup, but he's going to place a good chunk of it, and you can get the value back later.
Anything to add, Rocky?
I was just going to say, if you are going to trade for Kincaid or the person who was getting them, I think this might be the year to do it, just because I think he could be higher up on the target share ladder this year than maybe any other year, given the loss of Diggs. They didn't bring any significant established guy in. I know, I think Curtis Samuel is with the Bills now.
He is, but he sucks.
Yeah.
He's absolute trash. He's hot garbage that no one should ever draft. He's barely going to play. I don't understand this Curtis Samuel love. Just stop that. Stop it with that Twitter space.
Did he beat you at a championship?
I know. What did Curtis Samuel do to hurt you, Dustin?
Listen, do you ever go for a walk in the park and you see that bag, that grocery store plastic bag that's like tangled up in a bush and it's like damp on the inside and hot and steamy and it's like dirty on the outside? That's what Curtis Samuel was like. He's still a functional bag that you can put things in. You can put targets in it, but you don't feel good about it. It's gross and you don't really want it. You'd rather have a clean bag that you want to have a nice like tote or a backpack that's like, that's what Shakir is. That's what Keon Coleman is. Curtis Samuel is that hot trash bag out in your park.
For the sake of the Samuel family, we're moving on. I'm so sorry, y'all.
I just wanted to say, my main point, though, was that with tight ends, you kind of want a guy who can be a top two target. And I think maybe this year alone that might happen with Kincaid. And I think they might bring in, you know, so if Keon Coleman emerges, if they draft another guy, if they sign somebody next year, that might change going forward. So it might be a good time to sort of get him. Maybe he has a bit of a spike this year, and then you can flip him.
Yeah. Sorry, Samuels. let's move on to TA5. Deshaun Watson or a 2026 first and third plus Adam Thielen.
This Dustin, was me, so I'll let you guys talk about it first.
Yeah, Dustin, any other bag references you want to make about this?
This is a super flex league, correct?
Yes.
I think I'm sticking with Deshaun Watson, and I'm willing to risk it that Deshaun Watson can be 75% of what he used to be and that he's better than what it was last year. Like, I think he's good enough. I think he's a middling quarterback. I think he's in that 12 to 15 range. I think he has potential to be a top 10 guy if he's really good, if he goes back to his 2021 or whatever it is form. I think a first and third is a little light. Adam Thielen you get this year, and that's it. Like, you get this year, maybe half a year this year, which might not even be good if Bryce Young is not good. So I'm going to stick with Deshaun Watson on this one.
Yeah, I love it on both sides. So the bet is, on one side, I think Deshaun Watson's shoulder is bust. Like, he's got that chip in the whatever the bone is on your shoulder. He's done. And so he's going to limp through this year. And then in 2026, he's going to be out of the league, whatever. He's not going to be playing. And so the manager of this team is going to be out a quarterback, and they're going to have a very high first-round pick in 2026. That's the bet that I see on that end. On the other side, he was the third overall quarterback just a couple of years ago in Dynasty formats and in Superflex formats. It's like, okay, he may not be the third best quarterback in the NFL for fantasy, but he could still very well be a top 12 quarterback. He was somewhere in, 8 to 10 range. If you take out his negative scoring week last year, he was fine. He was still getting his feet under him. There were weird weather games, like new offense. Everyone hated him. I'm sure that weighed on him. Not that I'm rooting for the guy personally, but like there's some mental toll that will probably diminish over time. I think that he is going to produce somewhere in the low-end QB1, high-end QB2 range. That's the other bet. I tend to believe the second bet, but I get both sides. I think that it's a good, fair trade, and I think that the outcome is not going to be somewhere in the middle. I think one side or the other is going to be incredibly right.
And here's the deal. Like, if you just want to be – the people who generally root against Deshaun Watson root against him harder because he's a creep.
Yeah.
And Coop said this on the show. Like, you don't get points for not having creeps on your team. It's not like you get, like, points for non-creepy teams. Like, you're still going to take Tyreek Hill, right? Like, you're still going to take him on your team because he's that good, even though he's, like, breaking legs on the beach and pushing people in marinas. You're still going to take Rashee Rice, right, no matter what he does, because he's good. I'm okay taking that discount on Deshaun Watson and taking the bet that he's going to be better than what he was.
I get both sides of that.
I get both sides. I would never have his jersey up here. I would never broadcast. Like, I'm so happy to have Deshaun Watson. But at the end of the day, if you want to win fantasy games, he's going to help you win fantasy games.
Yeah, Rocky, which side did you take here?
So yeah, I'm the one making the bet that Deshaun Watson will be returned to form at least to some extent. I got Watson here. I originally I think this guy had four quarterbacks, like legit starting quarterbacks. I figured Watson would be the cheapest one. I only have Herbert in this league. I'm not sure who else I have, but. I think I went really low end last year, and I think Jimmy Garoppolo was one of my starters or something. I forget, but so I figured I'd get a QB2. I figured he'd be the cheapest. I'm basically thinking the way you guys were thinking that I do think we're going to see at least high end QB2 level play out of him. I looked at last year's TA scoring. He played six games, 19 and a half points, three 20-point games, then a 19 and a half point game out of those six games. So yeah. not that he's going to light the world on fire and be Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes, but I think he's going to certainly be a serviceable QB2 for me with potential low-end QB1 upside. So, and for a 26 first and two pieces I didn't care about, that was fine by me.
Yeah, good deal. All right, TA6. Let's see. So these are all outhouse challenges. Rocky, can you describe an outhouse challenge for me?
The best thing on Twitter? That's what it is.
Outhouse challenge is when Russ, or occasionally myself, but usually Russ, will tell the a couple TA leagues, usually. I guess he's done it in some other leagues too, but that anyone can send him a trade. It has to be a half decent trade. He warns not to make sure they're not completely off, or he'll just reject them. But send him a trade. Who will post it on Twitter? If the side that the person is offering wins the poll, then Russ has to accept the trade. That's basically what the challenge is. Mm-hmm. So he did that in TA 6, 7, and 8 this week. We'll get to it. I got a couple trades done with them. There's a couple others here. That he had to accept as well, and he gave us little comments with them also.
Yeah. All right, let's get into it. James Cook or Ladd McConkey. I'm gonna put his little commentary first before I kick it to y'all. Says, "Ugh, I hate running backs. Figured this would go through though." Yeah, this was a pretty fair one. Dustin, do you prefer James Cook or Ladd McConkey?
Yeah, I take James Cook. Young running backs are hard to get in general, and especially good ones on good offenses. James Cook is a solid low-end running back one. I think Ladd McConkey is a solid, at best, low-end wide receiver too, so I think you get the value in Cook. I'm surprised it's this close, to be honest with you, in the thing, but that's what you get with these outhouse challenges, is you get someone like me who just votes the bottom one on every one, so you get what you get. But I think he definitely won the Cook side.
Yeah, this was 53-47, essentially, by the way. Cook won. That's went in, so he had to accept the trade. I would also pretty easily take Cook here. I get why McConkey is attractive. You know, going to Los Angeles with her. But I think Cook is more of a known entity for me, and I think the fact that their receiving corps took a hit can only help him. Both maybe he gets some more dump offs, and maybe there's a little more action in the running game.
Yeah,
I mean,
I think I froze.
You froze for a second. That's cool. Cook immediately went on the trade block. So this is just so emblematic of the outhouse challenge. Trades get done that you don't want sometimes. You just got to live with them. Moving on, this is one that won in a landslide, and it was intentional. I'm throwing all sorts of caveats out there because this was mine. and I know it wasn't a good trade, but I promise I have reasons for it. Dak in a 26 first or Sam Laporta and Roschon Johnson. Rocky, roast me before your internet completely dies. Or not. Let's go to Dustin.
Listen, I love the Dak and the first side of this.
Yep.
I like Laporta a lot, but when you start talking about target share in that offense, if Jameson Williams takes the step up that we expect, that's going to have to come out of Sam Laporta's targets. It's not coming out of Amon-Ra St. Brown's. If Jahmyr Gibbs continues to exceed and do well, where does his targets come from? They're going to come out of Sam Laporta's. David Montgomery's still there. Like, it just seems to me that Laporta, it was at his ceiling last year. I don't think he can change from that. I think that's where he's going to be. So I'm okay trading away Sam Laporta. Roschon Johnson is going to be stuck behind DeAndre Swift. He's not going anywhere unless Khalil Herbert might get traded or cut. I highly doubt it this year, but Roschon's kind of stuck there. I love Roschon Johnson as a person. You get Dak in a first. Yes, it's a 26. So you get a good quarterback who I think is undervalued right now, Dak Prescott, who I think will stay with the Cowboys, but could land in a better situation next year. If he doesn't sign with the Cowboys, could he replace Tua in Miami with better receivers? Possibly. Could he stay? I mean, if he stays with Dallas, he still has CeeDee Lamb. There's a possibility he could move somewhere and still have a good situation wherever he goes. I like the Dak side. I think it's fine to trade with Sam Laporta. You're trading him at his ceiling, and I think you got good value out of it.
Rocky, roast me.
I agree with everything Dustin said. This is pretty easily, like the poll shows, it's pretty easily Dak in the first for me. That's just a lot of value there. And Dak is severely underrated. As much as it pains me to say that as an Eagles fan, he's from a fantasy perspective anyway, he's severely underrated. He scores a ton. He has a lot of, he has a decent, well, maybe Dustin probably has a better grade on a better idea of this than I do, but he seems from my perspective to spike a decent amount too. He'll have some nice little spike weeks. But overall, I think he's pretty consistent as well. So, again, I guess Dustin's tool would show that for sure. But from my perspective, that's how I see Dak. And he's pretty much a consistent low-end QB1 kind of guy. And like you said, Laporta at his ceiling. So, and you're getting a first on top of it, and you're getting the quarterback, underrated quarterback in a super flex league. I'll take that.
Yeah, just looked up Dak's browse number. He is a 4.7 in RO, so his reliability and opportunity scores, which is a really good number. The highest you can have in that is basically a 1%, like 100%. So most people are in that 4.7. That's a really good number. And his SC score is 4.6. The highest you can have of that is, I think, at 8.8. So he's right dead middle. Like he's, but those are really good numbers compared to everyone else. Really high score. And I think he's one of the highest SC score numbers in all the starting quarterbacks. So really great. You're right, Rocky. He does spike really well. We forget Dak Prescott was QB3 last year. Like he did really well. 36 touchdowns, didn't rush a ton, only 55 rushes last year. But if he gets back up to the 60, 70 rushes with not having Tony Pollard there, like he could easily do that and add a few more, a little more to his base. I think that's great. I think he's really undervalued right now. He's going as like QB, I don't know, like 12 or something in drafts, which is crazy to me.
I agree with everything that y'all said as the person on the other side of this trade. I'm not going to defend it, but I'm going to explain my reasoning why I made this trade. I had made it previously this offseason. It was rejected. So it was not a direction that Russ wanted to go. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of really heavy QB builds across all of my 40 leagues, and I wanted to try something different. And the spirit of Trade Addicts is do something different. Try different things. Be creative in your builds. Make offers that you wouldn't normally offer. I wouldn't normally do this. But I wanted to try my hand at cadence, at having a very short rebuild, retool, to where I'm not going to be great this year, where I'm going to build an advantage that is outside of my typical builds, because I have Mark Andrews, I have TJ Hockenson, I have Pat Freiermuth. I thought if I could layer in Sam Laporta, I could be different enough than my league mates, which have moved toward quarterback this non-point scoring season. There's some really strong quarterback-laden teams, along with one super team. And so how can I be different? It's by hoarding tight ends right now. And so I'm putting myself to a challenge. I am saying I have 1 year to figure this thing out, to fix this to a point where I am making that a late first. If I can make that the 110 and Dak Prescott doesn't re-sign with the Cowboys, or if he falls into some sort of situation where CeeDee Lamb isn't there, there are ways in which I have outs that are not currently seen in the market right now. I agree I lost in value. It's not something I would typically do, but I'm really compelled by it.
No, I think that's the fun part when you're in a bunch of leagues like this, is you can make those trades and get something different, right? You're right. There could be a world where Dak Prescott signs with the Steelers, and like that's a worse situation, or stays with the Cowboys and they don't sign CeeDee Lamb, and it's Jalen Tolbert and Brandon Cooks and, you know, Kevontae Turpin and Ryan Florino, who I really like, but I don't think is a number one. Like, they could really be hurting. There's also a world there is also a world where Dak re-signs with Dallas, they re-sign CeeDee, and they go get an Ayuk or a T. Higgins, and then you're talking about a massive upgrade. But it's just there's so many variables there, so I think it's fine to go out there and try something different. I love Roschon Johnson. He was my favorite person last year at the Combine.
Yeah,
he's just such a fun energy to him, so I think it's great to try something different. And that's what's fun. Like, it's a league where you can try those things, so I'm fine with it.
The final thing is two of the contenders are super light at tight end, and I knew they were going to send offers. So I didn't have to beat the poll. I had to beat their polls as well. And so I put something out very early saying, like, guys, he's mine. You don't get a shot at Sam Laporta. Yeah. He's going to win this poll. So, like, look elsewhere, please, and thank you. And they did. They were all hunting Amon-Ra at that point.
There you go.
All right, moving on. I've tried to defend myself. I know it's an indefensible trade. Yeah.
Well, let's revisit this in 2 years and see what happens, see what it's like.
Give me enough time and it'll look good. Yeah. All right. next trade, Devonta Smith for Trey Benson and Ladd McConkey.
Rocky, this is one that actually didn't happen.
What?
If you look at his comments, he had already traded McConkey, so he couldn't do it, but he wanted to put it on here because it did go through. He was offered Smith for Benson and McConkey, but he couldn't accept it because he'd already traded McConkey away.
Redacted. We're not going to provide any analysis because we're running long anyway. TA7. Jordan Addison in a 26 first for Aaron Rodgers, Mike Evans, Joe Mixon, and James Connor. So, young guy, 26 first, or a bunch of old contending pieces. Dustin, what do you think about this deal?
Give me the old contending pieces. I've always been out on Jordan Addison. I think his touchdowns last year were really fluky. I don't want to wait. If it was a 2025 first, it might be better, but I'm going with the older guys. Rodgers, you're going to get one more year out of. Mike Evans, you probably get one or two. I think Joe Mixon on a high-powered Texans offense, you might get 2 years out of. And James Conner, you're going to get six games, maybe a year out of him. So I'm staying with the older guys. It's a win-now move that I think is going to be better off. And you have more assets you can trade later on in the season if you aren't contending, and you can probably recoup more picks. Rocky, what do you think?
Yeah, this is actually me, by the way. Okay. And both of these last two are me that I sent to Russ. I actually got Addison in the first, but I am not, I guess in theory I could contend, but I don't have a ton outside of these four guys. No. And they're all old, and I was very middling 2 years ago. I think I snuck into the playoffs, did not make the playoffs last year. And I've been wanting to, I actually did an outhouse challenge in this league a few weeks ago, hoping that maybe somebody would come after my old guys. Nothing really came about that actually got through. So the way I kind of looked at it is, A, I wanted to get started on a rebuild, and B, I looked at this as basically like maybe 4 to 6 seconds at most. And am I getting Jordan Addison in a 26 first for 4 to 6 seconds? I don't think so. So that's kind of how I looked at it. And I think I have a little higher opinion of Addison, I guess, than Dustin does too, which helps. So, and Russ did not have a 25 first. I might have tried for that. But given that the 26 first still like 58-42, I'm curious if the 25 first would have even gotten through. But maybe it would have. But I probably would have tried for the 25 first if he had one, but he didn't. So that's basically where I was. I wanted to get a couple young pieces. I knew selling these guys individually was only going to get me a second value. So I was doing exactly what Russ said. He said, hasn't Twitter ever heard of compiling value? And that's exactly what I was trying to do. The people would see 4-point scores. I feel like Twitter tends to lean towards assuming contention. And I was not. So it made a ton of sense for me.
Yeah, and I think you do get some flexibility with Addison with TJ Hockenson being out probably the first 6 to 8 games. So if Addison comes out of the gate really strong, you could flip Addison for more. So you might be able to flip Addison for a first-round pick if he has a really strong start of the season, and then we can see his value drop when Hockenson gets back.
I love the idea of pushing somebody else into a contending window when you're trying to rebuild against their will as well. It's like, okay, yep. Go be mid. Sell off half these guys.
Yeah.
All right, moving on to TA8. More old guys. All right, Derrick Henry and Davante Adams for Xavier Worthy and Dontavian Wicks. Rocky, old guys or young guys here?
I think you had stepped away real quick, but the last one was me. This is also me, by the way.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, so TA-8 is a lot like my TA-17. So I am trying to get younger. I kind of figured this was going to be considered an overpay by Twitter. I kind of think Henry's a little overvalued at this point. I feel like Twitter views him as a late first-ish value. I think he's, what, 30 at this point. I know he might have one more good year with the Ravens left in him, but I don't value him that highly. Devontae Adams is basically a second. Do I feel super confident? I mean, either of these guys? No, but I'll take the shot on Worthy with Patrick Mahomes. I did like Worthy coming out. And like I said, I felt pretty confident this one was going to go through when I sent it. I feel like it's a little bit of overpay value-wise, but I was perfectly fine with it because, again, I was TA-8 is probably one of the – I'm in all the TA leagues, and TA-8 is probably one of the least active except for Tyler Karp, so who's just constantly sending trades. But so given that, and I was having trouble moving my old guys, which it's harder to do at this point anyway. I knew I'd probably have to wait into the season, but Russ gave me the chance here to dump a couple of them, and maybe I overpaid a little, but I'm fine with it.
What do you think, Dustin?
Do you want the fifth best receiver on a team and this pencil? Because that is what Da'Tavion Wicks and Xavier Worthy are. Xavier Worthy is built like a pencil. His legs are so, so skinny that I'm afraid they're going to snap just by his like body weight on them. And Da'Tavion Wicks is like the fifth option on the Packers. I'm all about the old guys there. I think you get 2 years out of Henry, 2 years out of Adams, plenty of scoring. I'm not sure Xavier Worthy is ever going to mount to a whole lot. I think he's going to be slightly better than MVS ever was, which wasn't great. So, I mean, he's a slightly better version of MVS, Mecole Hardman. So I'm not expecting big things from him. Even if he blossoms into the true wide receiver two behind Rashee Rice, he's still going to be third behind Rice and Kelce on that team. So I'll take the old guys there.
We kind of talked about this earlier. What happens when injury occurs, right? What happens when Derrick Henry is missing 3 weeks? Is he going to have any trade equity when the points really matter? Same with Devontae Adams. You're making a risky bet on both profiles. Same with Xavier Worthy, though, like 50-50 bet at best. So my thought is, if one of them gets hurt, if we have slow starts from any of these players, which ones can I liquidate the quickest? It's probably the young guys. There's probably going to be some tethering to value. I don't like any of these players, which means it's a good trade.
I think if you're going to bet on old guys, if you look at Adams and Henry's history, they are the more durable of the older guys who miss a lot less time. So I think I'm willing to risk them not missing time.
The elite guys, they do age more gracefully than we give them credit for. Adam Harstad did a study on this, and it truly is, like, it's surprising. Go give him a follow as well. But that's the end of our trades. That is the end of our show sheet. So as Rocky likes to say, that's the end of our show. Dustin, why don't you plug your stuff one more time? Because there's a lot of it, and it's all really good.
I'm just going to plug. You can follow me on Twitter. I want to plug the shirt I'm wearing. It's FTR, so Finish the Race Apparel. My buddy runs it. It's a shirt company, so you can find FTR Apparel online. All the proceeds go to charity. He's basically, short story, he's a doctor who had a concussion in med school, basically had to retrain how to read, how to basically see for like a year, took a year off of med school, didn't think his life was ever going to turn around. His brother basically told him, you finish that race no matter what. So he came up with a line of shirts. It's got some stuff on the back. It says, you know, finish the race, you know, push your limits. So I just want to shout out his brand. He sent me a couple shirts. We gave some out at the combine, but FTRapparel.com, you can get some shirts. And like I said, all proceeds go to charity. So he just did to kind of like help people out that are going through some similar situations. So shout out FTR Apparel. Find them online, buy a shirt, and you can follow me on Twitter at TheDUnit13.
Awesome. Good stuff, man. Thanks for joining us today. Rocky, thanks for having me on again. You just keep letting me come on, and I appreciate it, man.
Yeah.
They got a good one, man.
Yeah, I'm happy to have you. I'll just tell Russ to keep not showing up. So.
Russ seems to dodge me left and right. He didn't do the pot-a-thon last year with me. He did the pot-a-thon this year with me. He was like, oh, I'm going to miss Tuesday night. I was like, okay, I see how it is. You just keep dodging me.
But we didn't talk about this. Do you want me to finish up with all the random stuff here at the end, Tommy?
Oh, I didn't even see it. Yeah, finish it up for me.
Just the, you know, the Twitter handles, all that good stuff. I'm at
thanks.
He's at FF Tommy B. Russ can say his when he finally comes back. But make sure you're following the DAP Network on Twitter at DAP_network, on YouTube. Give us a subscribe. Give us a rating. All that good stuff. And, of course, if you subscribe to the Patreon, you can see all our beautiful faces. You can see Dustin's background with his jerseys. You can see his FTR shirt. So if you can see us when we record. You can get into the Cool Kids Club, our Discord chat. Lots of trade talk going on in there at all times. And finally, as we've kind of mentioned earlier in the show, make sure you're supporting Fantasy Cares. Year round, but especially now, it's got Fishbowl and all this good stuff going on. It's a great reminder to just donate whatever you can. So I think that's everything I need to kind of say and plug at the end here. So good night, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Great Attic Pod, a proud member in the Dynasty Attic Podcast Network. Please follow your hosts at Dynasty Haha and at Dynasty FS Attic. Please subscribe, rate, and review. We will catch you next time on the Trade Attic Podcast. Poopy fan, that is the best. See ya.